Pages 25 to 29, Death Wears Silk, a Croydon murder mystery by me, Sarah Morgan. The job of the artist is always to deepen the mystery. This is a quote from Francis Bacon, painter, 1909 to 1992. Our fabulous Sarah Morgan, membership lead, never ceases to amaze us with her multiple talents and endless loveliness. In this short story, Sarah unleashes creativity, fun, and experimentation through mystery. Well done to Sarah. I'd just like to say here as a disclaimer, those are lovely words, but I did not write them about myself. Anyway, let's get started. Croydon. Wednesday, the 18th of August, 1880, was a day seemingly like any other. Alders and Grant's department store was readying for another day of trade, as it had done Monday to Saturday, from the hours of 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. for the last 18 years. Outside the main front entrance, the doormen stood in the refined comportment as expected of their duty, with a discreet, unreadable facial expression, not daring to convey the blistering humidity of the high summer month. Dressed in bottle-green velvet coats, with gold-trimmed edges and brass buttons, they appeared as stoic as Her Majesty Queen Victoria's guardsmen during a parade. Head of doormen Eric mopped his sweat-beaded brow with a gold silk kerchief, quietly pulled from his breast pocket when he was sure no one was looking. Up on the fourth floor, the restaurant bristled with anticipation for the day's fine diners. The champagne flute sparkled like diamonds, and the genuine grade silver cutlery shone as it caught the rays of the sunlight pouring in from the glass-domed ceiling above. Head Chef Aisha was gearing up to deliver the instructions for today's menu to her team. Lamb cutlets with minted peas for the entree, turbot with lobster sauce for the fish course, roast pheasant and glazed carrots for the main, and a spectacular Charlotte Russe gâteau for dessert. If that wasn't enough to satisfy the stomach, then would follow a selection of fine cheeses from France and seasonal fruits grown in the atrium on the grounds below. Sous Chef Nigel looked visibly nervous. His mind had been all over the place of late, and the leaping somersaults in his stomach were not aiding the waves of extreme nausea buckling at his insides. Maitre d' Boller strode up and down the lined assembly of his servers to inspect their uniforms were crisp, pristine and to regulation. Waitress Sarah shifted uncomfortably on her feet as soon as he passed. She had only been in the job for a week and had already gotten a ferocious and very public dressing down from Lady Penelope de Montfort, when a few days before she had mistakenly served her an anchovy toast hors d'oeuvre, to which she was deathly allergic. Sarah knew she was too clumsy for this calling, but she desperately needed the wages. Down on the third floor was the children's department, and Manager Daniel stood with an air of satisfaction as he scanned his painstakingly arranged displays. As far as the eye could see were the playthings of dreams, rows of finest porcelain dolls, exquisitely carved wooden rocking horses, armies of hand-painted tin soldiers, and mechanical wind-up animals of every species imaginable, to name but a few. Encircling all of this was a fully operational train set, happily chugging its way around the expansive tracks, choo-chooing proudly as it departed another station. It was almost an upset to Daniel that soon flurries of excited little ones would come through and ransack the toys. But in the end, nothing pleased him more than seeing a child beaming from ear to ear with happiness at their new purchase. There was one, however, the brutish, self-important son of Lady de Montfort, Edmund de Montfort, who caused him nothing but distress. Nothing was good enough for this insolent rogue. Even the eye-wateringly expensive chess set, which Daniel had gone to great lengths to source and import from China, which ended up on the floor as Edmund had turfed it with great force on its bottom side in a fit of rage. The second floor was home to the gentleman's department, with suiting and tailoring fit for the most distinguished of fellows. camel hair overcoats, sophisticated tailcoats, silken and brocade waistcoats, high-quality cotton shirts in every colour hue, and finest woolen trousers and adorned golden dress rails. An exquisite antique vanity showcased costly jewel pins with delicate yet ostentatious gemstones to pair with the impressive selection of cravats and neckties. Black and brown high-quality patent leather brogues, silver-handled walking canes, elaborate gold pocket watches, and plush top hats were but some of the accessories boasted by the collection. Manageress Inez was looking over the day's appointments. A dry lump formed in her throat, and her knees trembled as her eyes came upon the 11 a.m. booking for Lord Henry Percival de Montfort to have a full wardrobe fitting. She knew he was one of the store's most important customers. He spent a vast fortune on a routine basis, as though it were mere pennies. However, like his wife and son, he was a petulant, entitled, and arrogant man. He thought nothing of berating and scolding anyone he perceived to be causing him the slightest inconvenience. Not long before, he had had one of Inez's tailors sacked for gently suggesting that perhaps a wide-fitting shoe would better complement Lord de Montfort's gout-ridden foot. Inez had pled desperately with the store's owner to save the promising young employee, but she knew deep down it was a futile pursuit. On the ground floor, the glinting white marble floored foyer, laid with bottle green velvet carpet walkways, led to the grand oak staircase. For the lesser climbing inclined shopper, there was a steam-powered elevator to transport them to every level, manned by lift operators Peter and Paul. To the left of the staircase was the grand atrium, which held thousands of sweetly fragranced flowers and fauna to excite the senses. Wrought iron balustrades were covered in sky-reaching, vibrant hollyhocks, and at every turn, one could see and inhale a vast array of ferns, begonias, orchids, hydrangeas, chrysanthemums, roses, and lilies. The heat was palpable, but eager employees were on hand to vigorously fan even the most disgruntled of customers, seeking floral ornaments to enhance their already luxurious homes. Gardener Dave was spraying some apodistra with a secret concoction he had invented to keep the insects at bay, with a perplexed look of concern on his face. Across the way, head florist Stella was checking the day's delivery. She let out an audible gasp and hurriedly closed one of the boxes shut when she saw something she never expected to see. Outside in the back courtyard, stable manager David was tenderly feeding a sugar cube to his favourite steed, Frank. It was his duty to ensure the stable boys had the delivery horses ready and presentable for the day. As much as he tried to banish it from his thoughts, an angry altercation he had inadvertently witnessed the day before kept rushing with force to the forefront of his mind. Delivery coordinator Nima was on standby to ensure smooth running. Every purchase ordered for home transportation would be packaged in the store's signature bottle green boxes, expertly wrapped with gold velvet ribbon, ready to be loaded onto the horse-driven carriages. This service came with a high price tag, thus the utmost attention to detail was paramount. But up on the first floor, the ladies' fashion department, something was very wrong. Seamstress Clara had gone to dress one of the mannequins in the latest Parisian style, as was in vogue with the fashion elite. She had let out a blood-curdling scream, and colleagues Isa and Cellini raced over to see the cause of the hubbub. Clara's face was drained of all colour, and she stood anchored to the floor, unable to move even an inch. What happened? Cellini spluttered in fright. Isa started to tug at Cellini's arm, but was struggling to find the words to describe what she saw in front of her. Amidst the sophisticatedly dressed mannequins, who were gleefully unaware of the scene before them, lay a stiff and rigid Lady Penelope de Montfort, Her bodice was stained with a pool of dark crimson. A pair of dresses had plunged deep into her chest. There was no two words about it. She was dead, and somebody had made very sure of that. Any familiar character names are used for entertainment in this story and bear no resemblance to real-life individuals. For the next part of the story, we want to hear from you. If you have any ideas for what should happen next, want to collaborate with me, or even submit a piece of your own, email sarah.morgan@croydonvision.org.uk.